One of the things that sets us at Proof to Product apart from other people teaching about wholesale is the breadth and depth of not only my personal knowledge, but also the fact that we bring in lots of other perspectives, from buyers to sales reps to consultants and manufacturers. This wide lens allows us to share best practices and current trends that we're seeing in the market currently. We're not sharing one narrow viewpoint about how to sell wholesale. We have amassed decades of knowledge through the collaborations and inclusivity that we foster in our community, supporting thousands of product-based industry leaders. And this episode is an example of that. Our guest today is Kimberly Yerkowitz, a 25-year veteran in the stationery industry. She has expertise from a variety of perspectives as a retailer and buyer, as a sales rep, as a manufacturer, and as a paper camp speaker. She's also been a previous guest on this podcast. She was on episode 9 of Proof to Product way back in 2017, and that is still one of our most popular episodes to date. You can go back and listen if you want to hear why wholesale catalogs are an important sales tool. Kimberly and her husband Zach currently own Measure Twice, a paper and gift shop in Brooklyn, which was highlighted as one of New York City's best in New York Magazine last year. Kimberly has long been a proponent of an old school approach to small business, cheerleading for brick and mortar, and making the effort to steer clear of Amazon. She also thinks it's okay, even essential, to include politics in your business plan. On today's episode, Kimberly is sharing the challenges she faced having owned and operated 3 brick and mortar retail shops through challenging times, why she chooses not to use FAIR when making wholesale purchases, and her preferences for how she likes to be pitched by wholesale brands. Today's episode is sponsored by our Unlock Buyer Secrets interview series. To make a strong first impression with wholesale buyers, we need to do a few things really well. We need to make it easy for stores to purchase from us. We need to have clear pricing and terms and conditions. We need to clearly communicate and add value at every touch point. And we need to focus on building strong relationships with our customers. And all of that becomes infinitely easier when we actively listen to our customers. This on-demand interview series will give you a competitive edge by providing you with a window into what buyers want and need from you. And the best part is, it's only $27. Get access at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. That's prooftoproduct.com/unlock. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of 4. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Kimberly, welcome back to Proof to Product.
Hi, friend. It's so good to be here.
It's so good to see your face. You were on the show way back in episode 9. I can't believe it.
That's insane.
I know. It was so long ago.
Doesn't even feel real.
I know, right? And then that was when we were talking about catalogs and sales. And now you own your 3rd brick and mortar shop, Measure Twice. So I am so excited to dive into that today. But tell us about your store. Where are you located? What types of products do you carry? And who are your core customers at Measure Twice?
Sure. So we're in Cobble Hill, Brooklyn. And we're an 800 square foot store that's mostly card wall and then like notebooks and stationery and little gifty things, you know, candles, birthday party stuff, you know, whatnot, puzzles. We opened in October of 2019, which is right before COVID.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into, I think. And it's our 3rd store. So our first store was in the West Village right after 9/11. Mm. Not great timing. My husband and I own the store. I keep saying we. My husband and I have owned these stores together, which we'll get into. Our first store was in the West Village in Manhattan, and that was after 9/11, so that wasn't super great timing, obviously. And then our second store was in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and that was right before the recession. So that wasn't great timing either.
Yeah.
And then we actually made jokes when we opened, like, well, third time's a charm, like, we're not going to have a world event. And then COVID hit.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I like jinxed us.
You did not jinx yourself. For sure. What went through your head though, when the world shut down and here you are opening this store after these other challenges you faced with your first two shops?
There's a lot of answers to that. So I think it was such a blur, like a big picture blur, because New York got so hit first that was always bigger than, oh, you know, what are we going to do today for work kind of thing.
Right.
Which probably helped, which is, there's no way to word that by saying like, oh, that was helpful, because of course it was not. But I think that sort of shock bubble probably helped in what, like, we were like, well, we'll just do what we can today, sort of thing. And the pressure of, yeah, it was just, everyone knows, obviously, it was so gargantuan that we weren't thinking, what if we can't stay open? Just because we were in shock. I feel like I'm in shock now saying it, right? Like it's still like traumatic.
Oh, for sure.
So like everyone just shifted, and we talked to a lot of store owners, a lot of friends, like, what are you guys doing? People on our block, like just people in the neighborhood, Cobble Hill really came together.
Nice.
And it really felt like we just pieced it together day by day.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of strategy. There wasn't a lot of, oh, I have an idea. Like it really was sort of fend for yourself. Oh my God, what are we doing?
As I reflect back on what that time in my life was like, I feel like it's the same exact thing of like, okay, we're day to day, we're figuring this out. We're managing our own health, safety, expectations, all of the things.
All of it. Yep.
But I want to back up a little bit. Like, given your experience with the first two stores, you talked about how there was the 2008 recession and 9/11. Those were big obstacles and challenges to overcome having a brick and mortar shop. What made you motivated to go for a third round with Measure Twice, given those challenges?
Well, I certainly thought there wouldn't be another thing like that.
Of course.
Like, there was statistically no way that was going to happen. But I felt it was like a perfect storm. So we didn't mean to open a store. Like, it wasn't in our plans or anything. I was repping at the time. Zach was sort of he is a musician, and he was like sort of part-time touring at the time. And an account of mine in our neighborhood was closing. And she was like, hey, can you help me find someone to take over our lease? And I was like, oh, sure. And I talked to a bunch of different accounts. I was like, hey, do you want to open in Cobble Hill? Do you want a third store? Do you, you know, who wants in on this? And then my sister came to visit, and she, I have this, like a perfect image in my mind of her face. She looked at me and she was like, what are you doing? Why can't it be yours? And I was like, oh my God. And I'm like, well, because I have a job. And right. Then originally it was going to be a different thing. It wasn't just going to be a retail store. Zach, it was going to be a job for Zach to, we sort of toyed with nonprofit stuff and some literacy book related things. And then that sort of quickly turned into, this is going to be a lot easier to just do a store because we knew how to do it. And so like the woman who owned the store, whose lease we took over, had been there for 10 years. So it already had a footprint. It already had traffic. We knew the neighborhood because we lived in the neighborhood. And I knew her business because I used to sell to her.
Right.
So I knew sort of how she was doing without really, you know, knowing from her how she was doing.
Right.
So it had it not been a perfect storm, to answer your question the long way, had it not been all those things, I don't know that we would have done it.
So it wasn't like you weren't setting out to open another shop and to do a third round of this. It just kind of serendipitously came together. And
it really did.
I hear what you're saying too about like, it was easy for you to step into it, given your background as a sales rep, knowing the industry, knowing the neighborhood, knowing the customer base that was already there, the volume of sales that this store was already doing based on your limited viewpoint. Yeah. I mean, it kind of makes it a no-brainer at that point to say, if we have the space and the capital and the ability to do this, maybe we should give it a go.
Yes. So we did. It came together really quickly. I think I saw you. We did a paper camp like right as we were about to open.
Yeah. It was February 2020 in LA.
No, it was the one before that.
Oh, September. Yes. You opened September 2019, right?
October 2019. Yeah.
October. Okay. I think I saw you September.
Right after that paper camp. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sort of felt a little bit safer. I know everyone knows this and everyone gets tired of hearing about it, but New York rent is ungodly expensive.
Yeah.
And because I had my other job, like the business, it didn't feel as risky because I was like, oh, like Zach had part-time musician, like royalties and stuff coming in, and I had another job. So it was like, oh, there's a safe, like sort of a built-in safety net, which felt, you know, less risky.
Yeah. I mean, when I started Kelp Designs, my stationery brand, I had my corporate job. When I started Proof to Product, I had my day job still. Like, I agree with you. It makes it feel like you can take these risks.
Yes.
Because the financial security of your day-to-day life is kind of covered already.
Yeah. Had it been a different neighborhood or a different, any other piece, if it had been different, we probably wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
But all of it came together.
I love that it's in your neighborhood too, because that really truly makes it, I assume, easier for you.
Yes.
To manage shop, know your customers, all of those things, rather than, you know, commuting. I know some of our buyers that we've talked to in the past have had to commute to the store that, or they're opening stores in other areas that are outside of their hometown.
Right. Yeah. It goes hand in hand with sort of what we wanted, like value wise or politically about that. Like, we wanted it to feel really local. Like, it had to be probably overly authentic, which is kind of gross, but own my Gen X-ness about that. Like, it, we wanted to know the people who were there. We wanted them to know us. We wanted to be hands-on. Like, we are the owners, but we work there every day. We're also behind the counter. It isn't just that we own it and staff helps you.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, now we have become friends with customers and we all live in the same neighborhood. And it really helped during COVID to know, like, if I had been, I don't know what we would have done if had our store. We probably never would have gone to the store again. We probably would have closed, to be honest, if we were like, oh, we have to go into Manhattan now.
Yeah.
That would not have happened. So all of it, bonus, bonus, bonus.
Okay, you mentioned values-based business and how this is like a major priority for you. I know you have some strict guidelines and principles that you run your shop based on. Do you mind sharing those with us?
Yeah, not at all. You know this. They're probably too strict, but I'm okay with that. That's okay. So it's small stuff like everything in the store has to be something that we would buy anyway. We're really into representation and inclusivity. We love, you know, women-owned businesses. We love New York local stuff. And it's not like we're pretty fiercely anti-Amazon. We have our mission statement is on our wall behind us at the counter. And it's, I don't even know if it's, we like sort of shriek anti-corporate whatever. I feel like it's more like, oh, this is a place, you're welcome in this space. And we are human beings and we are together working on doing kind and important things. You know, like it's, I think because of COVID, it softened everybody in the unavoidable, but good ways that now it's more just about, we're like the local store. We joke that our business model is like a bodega. Like, it really is. People just stop by on the way home. Like, people will stop by with their dogs just to get a treat and say hi. Like, it isn't just about shopping. It's about we're physically part of your space.
Yeah.
And you're physically part of ours. And that's important. And that's, I mean, that's what we've set out to do. And it's been, you know, knock wood, we've been able to do that so far.
It sounds to me very much about the community and the inclusivity and the bringing people in, like you said. But this also translates to your business practices too. For example, you mentioned that you don't like to support Amazon. Does that mean you won't purchase from brands to sell in your store that are selling on Amazon? Do you have a stance on that?
I do. Yeah, we would rather they don't. It's funny that you mentioned that because we should have like a checklist, like you have to not sell on Amazon, right? Like to do this. Although, yeah, yes, it does. Short answer. And yeah, I don't know if it's old school or if it's, we just like sort of, it's just a real like pure traditional, we want to work directly with the brands and it's one-to-one and it's you sell things and then we sell things to our customers. And it's not through a platform that's taking money for their own business that we don't even know about, you know? It's hard. Like a lot of my retail friends who, you know, we talk weekly, monthly, whatever, who own stores are like, I can't believe you don't take advantage of fair discounts, for instance.
Yeah, I was going to head into that next.
Yeah. And that's okay. Like not everything has to be on sale. I think it's an unsustainable way to make everything discounted at all times. And that also doesn't value the work. Like the store that we have is, you know, one half of it is a giant card wall. And for us, that's art. That's people's work. And so we don't want to discount that in any way. And so it's okay. Our, you know, Knockwood again, we're lucky to be as, you know, profitable as we are, not having access to those discounts. And that's okay with us. And it's a decision we make. And I know if we were a bigger store or if we had 10 stores, like that would certainly exponentially add up. But for now, I mean, for now, for always, but right now it's okay. And we don't, you know, we don't mind bypassing that stuff.
I think it's really admirable how you're standing in your values, though, of like, these are things that are important to you in your personal life. And so you won't necessarily shop from a brand that sells on Amazon because that doesn't align with you. And you actively choose not to use Fair to find new brands or to shop wholesale that way because that doesn't align with your brand values. And I think it's really important for our listeners to hear all of this because it's another shining example of how every single retail shop owner is different and your preferences are different, your buying styles are different, how you like to be communicated with is different. We're actually in week 3 of Paper Camp right now, which is our marketing week, and we're talking about pitching and follow-up and all this stuff. And we did a panel with retailers, and it's always rewarding for me when the panelists have differing points of views, because we can have these conversations in a very respectful way to say, well, I prefer this. Oh, okay, cool. That's interesting. I prefer it this way. And it's eye-opening for our students because, again, you're here reflecting your values and how you run your business, but that's going to be different than some of your other colleagues.
Of course. Yes, totally.
And so I think it's beneficial to the manufacturers listening to hear everyone does this slightly differently. And that's where getting to know the stores and their brand values and how they do things is important. But also, like, that's where that relationship piece is so valuable, right?
That's a key piece to us. Like, we want to know who we're working with. We want to know who these people are. And I think, if I can put my rep hat on for a second, I want people to be able to pitch stuff to us. I want people to say, hey, you forgot your best-selling card that you've ordered on your last 27 orders. Whoops, like that happens. I want the selling is gone if you're ordering on a fair platform. And I need that. Like, buyers are busy. Buyers are, I mean, I might be the only one who won't use fair, but I know that all buyers are busy. I know all buyers forget stuff. I know you hit send on an order and you're like, oh my God, I forgot wrapping paper. Like, just little stuff. And buying directly from lines, they can help with that. Or they can point out stuff like, hey, this matches really well. I mean, all the selling tools.
Yeah. I think that what you're saying about the selling piece is gone. I was talking about this the other day. I think it was in our labs program. Everything's a little muddy right now in my head. About transactional selling versus relationship selling.
Huge. Huge.
As a rep, you experienced a whole lot of relationship selling because you were meeting with people face to face. You were reminding them of things they missed. You were recommending things based on your knowledge of the store and their customer base. When we sell online, whether it's through a platform like Fair or even our own website, it does remove a lot of that human-to-human connection. And so it's important for the lines listening that we interject that in other ways in our business. So even if we want the ease of that being a sales platform, or offering online ordering through our own Shopify site, like, we still need to inject that human connection for a long-term sustainable relationship. Do you agree?
100%. That's exactly right. I mean, if you sell to 1,000 stores, clearly you're not going to be talking to a buyer, like every buyer every day about every order that they place.
Right.
I mean, maybe it's just even having that open door or that avenue for communication, which, you know, on a fair platform or at similar platform kind of thing. I don't mean to keep saying fair. It could be, you know, the other ones. Knowing that I can say, hey, is there a way we can do this? Or can you do this boxed for us? Or what do you think about this? Or what if we change, you know, like, or custom stuff? Like, can you put Cobble Hill on this instead of just Brooklyn? Like, all of those things come from relationships with the lines that we work with.
Yeah, absolutely.
It enhances our business and theirs, I think.
Yeah. So you're not using Fair. So how do you find new brands to carry in your store? Like, how are you, I mean, clearly inclusivity, innovation, these things are important to you and your shop. What are you doing to proactively seek out new talent to bring into your store?
We mostly use trade shows and we get pitched a lot. So I get to see a lot of fun catalogs or line sheets or, you know, links. Instagram. I look on Instagram a lot. Recommendations. I love pitches. I'm going to insert something that maybe paper, like, because you're in marketing week and paper camp right now. And you and I talked about this earlier. We had, because the New York shows were a month ago, where are we now? Yeah, like a month ago. A lot of brands, a lot of makers came to visit the shop after the show, which is always fun. We love to meet everybody. I love that people even know who we are. But we got pitched a lot in a way that people were just going door to door down the street.
Oh, no.
And it's helpful for me for you to introduce yourself to me. Like, I can find a line that way. Like, come to the store, of course. I mean, don't cold call me, but, you know, pop in and say hi. But then I found out, like, there was a candle line we wanted to pick up. There was a candy line that we wanted to pick up. And I was like, oh, but you already sell to a store 3 doors down. Like, that doesn't, I don't know if those makers weren't aware that not every store wants to have the same stuff, or if they were just like, well, we'll just hit them all and statistically someone will bite. I wasn't sure what it was, but I thought, oh, they're not learning to not do this.
Yeah.
And so that's a good hint for, I mean, obviously you know that, but if you're in that at Paper Camp right now, it's a good reminder.
Yeah, for sure. I want to pull two common questions that came out of your statement just there that have come up in this round of paper camp. The first is there were several folks that said, should I show up at stores unannounced to sell my products? And we said, no, absolutely not. Yes. Please do not do that. Buyers are busy. It's like somebody showing up at your front door asking for your time. Now, we put a caveat to that because, of course, there's always nuance to everything. But we said, you know, if you want to show, if you go look at stores, people want you visiting their stores. We want you to be familiar mm-hmm. with the stores that you're trying to pitch. But at the same time, if you show up and you're asking for time from somebody unexpectedly, that's not the right way to do it. The best way to do it is to show up. Maybe you have a catalog and a single sample and you say, can I leave this for the buyer? And you give it with whoever's working the shop, because also you work in your shop, but other stores may have somebody else working.
Of course.
And so leaving that behind with like a handwritten note or something that they can look at their own time and their own way, pace, all that gives it flexibility to breathe. And then when you follow up later, it's a better chance of them saying yes. So I just want to reiterate what you said there of you don't like that showing up cold calling, and most buyers do not. But the second thing that you brought up that has been a big discussion point in Paper Camp this round is the idea of exclusivity, but also just awareness of who is carrying your products in close proximity. Right. So, you know, knowing that a store is three doors down and they're carrying a certain SKU, we want to be cognizant of that and make sure that we're not recommending that to you too, Kimberly. And I think that is an oversight sometimes that happens, and it's happening more consistently too.
We ran into an interesting problem that's sort of related to this. So there's a store, it's probably four blocks away. We have very different, same customers sometimes, just because we're both in the neighborhood, but very different stores, very different styles. And they, because they had been open longer, obviously, than we had, they had a line that we were interested in. And it was a better fit for us, like not because we wanted it, but it made, like stylistically, it just made more sense. And I think it's okay for lines to fire an account. I don't, that sounds sort of aggressive, but this is hard to say because I don't want people to get the the wrong idea and be like, oh, I can do that. I can just go to the one that I make more money on. Sometimes if you, like a line runs its course, maybe at a store, and then a different store opens, or a different store who didn't know about you is interested in picking you up, and you have to, like, the line has to make a decision on, do I grant exclusivity forever to this one store because they did it first? Or sometimes it's a better home somewhere else. It's a better match. It's a better similarity. And we had that happen, and it made sense. And the line ended up not feeling uncomfortable about it. And she was like, oh, right. Like, yes, they haven't ordered in a while. They only ordered these four things.
Yeah.
And it was a better match. And so that comes up too. And that came up with repping too. Like,
oh yeah.
Exclusivity and territory management is a big part of sales for any maker. It's tricky.
It's really tricky. I usually encourage folks not to offer exclusivity, or before they say yes or no, like, have a conversation about it. Ask questions. Ask, why are you requesting exclusivity? And if there is a valid reason, or, you know, it makes sense, then you can talk about the details of what that exclusivity is going to look like. But I also caution brands to set some boundaries and set some parameters around that. Do they need to order a certain volume of product or a certain dollar amount in a certain time frame to maintain that exclusivity? Because two, you need to from the brand's perspective, you need to think about opportunity costs. So if I'm offering this, you know, store A exclusivity, but they're not fulfilling those minimums, and I'm missing out on other dollars that could be captured in the area, you know, that's hurting my business. And so, you know, again, having that open dialogue and conversation, it sounds like that's worked really well for you. And so I just want to encourage our listeners, like, have the conversation before you agree to any sort of
Have the conversation. We've had people reach out and say, hey, just so you know, some XYZ wants to order something you already have. And sometimes I say, oh, I don't care. Thanks for letting me know. Sure.
Yeah.
No big deal. And sometimes I say, you know what? That's very specific to us. I'd appreciate it if you didn't. Mm-hmm. And then it depends on how far out you go. Like, Brooklyn's a giant place. Like, there's, you know, you can't just zip code protect, because that's crazy. Yes. Like, you're losing 200 stores in that zip code or something, you know.
When you went back to your brand and said, hey, that's something I'd prefer we keep, have you had any pushback on that?
Nope.
Nice.
I have had someone not say something and sort of like was sneaky about it. And I was like, it probably because they were afraid. I understand it's a hard conversation to have, but insert eye roll, like, don't do that.
No, it's always better to have the conversation. And also, you know, brands want to service their stores very well, but also they have to make decisions that are best for their business too. So, you know, there may be times where a buyer asks for something that they cannot honor, and they have to have that conversation and hold their ground and say, I'm sorry, that's something we can't accommodate right now. And there's no fault of you asking for something that you want or need.
Right.
Just like there's no fault at a brand for saying yes or no to something that works for their business too.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know that there would be a situation where we'd be like, how dare you? We're not ordering from you anymore. I don't know that it would ever be that dramatic. I know I've seen stores do that before, like certainly in my repping time that happened. But, you know, it's birthday cards. Like, let's have some perspective.
Right.
I mean, in our case, it's birthday cards.
Right, right. But even like people selling jewelry or candles or whatever, like it's we take our businesses seriously, but also we need to not take everything so seriously, I suppose, is the answer there.
Also, like, and I know this is not the same for other places in the country, but New York's a big place. Like, there's always it's New York. Like, that can be an excuse all the time. There's only two cute stores in your tiny little town. That's hard.
Yeah.
Like, you want all the best stuff. Like, that's, you know, like we said, it's tricky.
It's tricky. And everything's case by case basis. It's nuanced. So just, again, tying it back to the relationships and the conversations and just keeping that door open for conversation. Yep. Okay. You and Zach, we talked about this a little bit at the beginning. You and Zach own Measured Twice together. What are some common reactions that you get when people learn that you own this shop with your husband and you work together day in and day out and go home and spend life together too?
They range. There's so many different things. It ranges from people like tentatively being like, is your partners, right? Like they're very sensitive to like, you're a couple, right? And I'm like, well, like, and sometimes I forget, like, I can't just hold his hand or like, we certainly aren't going to make out at the store, you know, like silly things like that. But I think people are like, they're together all the time and they work like sometimes we're at the counter and we're very close. And like, so they're like, he's your partner. Like there's like a little trail off. It's cute. You know, people make jokes about how hard is it to do that? Or I could never do that. Aside from like the jokey kind of stuff, we have a really smart way to do this, or it works for us. I don't know how smart it is, but it certainly works for us. Like our schedule is really like we dial in, like I open too much there, or you're off too many times, that like it's a hard grid to fill in. Like we spend a lot of time making sure that it's like evenly distributed and neither of us is getting the brunt of it. I do notice, and there's a lot of times when like Zach will be like receiving or something in the back, and like a customer will be less polite to me, and we'll both notice like that person would not have done that had you been at the counter kind of thing. So that's kind of tough.
Yeah.
And then it's just fun. I feel like sometimes we're like hosting, like people are at our house, like people come in and they're like, Kimberly and Zach, you know, if we're both there together, and that's really fun. So it runs the gamut. Like some people are weird about it. Some people are funny about it. Some people are really supportive. Like, do you guys get some time off? Or like, I noticed you were closed for an extra day. Like, where did you get to go away? Like just, they're really invested in not just our store, but like us now.
That's awesome. Really sweet. Yeah. That is awesome. I've had a lot of conversations with folks about business partnerships in general, and some love it. Some say it's the hardest thing they've ever done. And then, you know, adding it being your partner and spouse, like to that layer, it's a whole other level too. So I'm sure you get a lot of conversations there.
Yeah. It works. Like it's a double-edged in that it's more comfortable for me to be like, what is this? Like in a way that I would never speak to an employee or a coworker, right? Or a boss. It's also like, oh, like we're like sometimes too comfortable or too casual. Like, you know, it runs the gamut.
Oh, but I love it. I mean, it works for you. And you've really created a space there that mirrors who you are as individuals, as well as a couple too, which is important.
And we have different strengths. Like if speaking to people who are looking to take on partners or have partners or having trouble with business partners or wondering what that would look like we really do have very different strengths. We're not both type A, we're not both number twos, we're not, but like it's, we're very yin and yang about like what we bring to the table. And I think that's important with anybody that you work with that closely.
Absolutely. Okay. We're wrapping up on time here, but I would love for you to kind of share some advice for anyone that's interested in opening up a brick and mortar shop. What is kind of like some parting advice you'd like them to hear, given that you've done it three times in three challenging sessions?
It's a lot of work. It just sounds so silly because everything's a lot of work. All jobs are a lot of work. It's a little bit like renovating a house or, you know, taking on a project like that. Like it's more time and more money than you think. And it's also more rewarding. So it's like a pick your battle, I guess. You know, and it depends on where you are with your starting capital. Like if you can afford staff and you can afford to have a lot of time off, great. If you can't, that's hard. Are you in a place where rent is so expensive that it seems impossible to do that? Do you have another job to sort of supplement that while you're doing it? Like, I think you have to mean it, which is as authentic as you have to be in it. You have to, like, it's grunt work. It's trench work. It's a lot of risk. If you're risk averse, not for you.
Yeah.
And I think it's helpful. I'll just say it's helpful. It has been helpful for us and for me to have had like work in a store on someone else's dime first, like no retail back to front before you do it. If you just jump in, like, I mean, unless you're opening like a store in your studio and then you're already running a business and then that's just, you know, like additional. But for brick and mortar, there's 1,000 different hats and you wear them all. It's tough.
Yeah.
But totally rewarding. And then you get it's your own little space. It's your own little, like, here we are, come see. And it's beautiful and wonderful. And you're a part of a neighborhood and a community that supports you. And, you know, you feel the love and that's amazing. And hopefully it works. Right. And hopefully it's not a global pandemic where, you know, no one knows what to do.
Right. God.
Yeah.
I know. Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, tell our listeners where they can find you in Brooklyn and where they can find you online.
Yeah. We're on Court Street in Cobble Hill, Brooklyn. Our Instagram handle is Measure Twice Shop. Come visit. Send us stuff. Lines. We love being pitched. Yeah. That's us.
Fantastic. Kimberly, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
It was just so fun to catch up with you. I know. Same.
It was such a treat to connect with Kimberly again and to hear how things are going at Measure Twice. Like we talked about in this episode, every retailer is different in terms of how they buy, how they like to be pitched, and the types of things that they're looking for when they purchase from a brand. Kimberly is just one example in a sea of many retailers, and I truly appreciate her taking the time to share her thoughts and experiences with us today. Because the more viewpoints we can hear, the more distinctive ways that we can hear from buyers, it really helps us in our outreach as manufacturers. Also, if you would like to hear from more store owners about their buying preferences, definitely check out our Unlock Buyer's Secrets interview series. This on-demand interview series will let you be a fly on the wall as you listen to buyers share what they need and want from wholesalers. These retailer roundtables are packed full of information to help you successfully reach new wholesale customers. And the best part, it's only $27. So get access to that at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. That's prooftoproduct.com/unlock. Also, if you found today's episode helpful, I would be grateful if you could leave us a 5-star rating and write a review. These reviews and ratings not only enhance the show's visibility, but I also love reading how each episode is positively impacting your life and your business. So you can leave that 5-star rating and write your review by going to ratethispodcast.com/PTP. That's PTP for Proof to Product. Again, that's ratethispodcast.com/PTP. And when you're there, you can choose your favorite podcast player and leave your rating there. Thank you so much for listening until the end. I'll be back next week with a new episode.